Well, after your session with the Signal Corps along the Mexican border, then you went, that was about a year, and then 1912?
I got paid out just before Christmas. Then I put in a hitch in the Coast Artillery and the cruise in the Navy, and almost the end of my Navy cruise, I met Hertha in Brooklyn, and we were married on January the 1st, 1920, and I worked in the Goodyear Tire and Rubber.
Well, let's go back. And you just jumped from the Signal Corps, and then we went to Hawaii, and
came back.
Then you went in the Navy. Let's get back to there. How'd you get in the Navy?
I went to the and came back from the islands, and
from Hawaii.
From Hawaii, and re-enlisted in the Coast Artillery, and stayed in that for a little over 2 years. And bought out and went in the Navy. Bought my way out of the Coast Artillery.
What do you mean, bought your way out?
Paid $75 for a discharge.
To whom? Under the table or
to
the
No. Government, you could, it was...
Oh, I see.
As long as you had a clean record.
You could get out.
You could, no trouble. And had in a certain length of time.
I see.
And so happened I had a clean record.
So you bought out.
And bought out and went in the Navy. And I put in full 4 years in the Navy. I was in the Navy from 16 to 20, all during World War I.
Is that right?
I was in the Navy. And at the end of the Navy, after we brought the troops back.
From Europe?
Yeah, made about, I think it was 14 trips and made the, you know, it was a transport. It was a big cruiser, but converted it so that we could carry about 900 troops or army personnel to a trip.
Where did you go in Europe? The same place?
Same place. Brest, France. Every trip.
You just were in Europe this past summer. Did you go back to Brest, France?
No. See, that's way out in the point, way out in the west. No, I'd been there on convoy duty, but we never got ashore on the convoy duty. We'd come within 150, 200 miles of the coast, and the French, British, cruisers would pick up the convoy that we were in. We'd turn tail and head back to the States.
You spent 4 years then in the Navy.
Full 4 years.
And then you say you... I think your daughter Evelyn told me one time that you had been in the Philippines.
That was just on a trip when I was in the Signal Corps as a telegraph operator, wireless operator.
Yeah.
But that was just a trip over, and
but you didn't spend any time.
Didn't spend any time over there.
So then, after 4 years in the Navy, then you got to Brooklyn somehow and met Hertha. How did you get to Brooklyn?
Oh golly!
Brooklyn Navy Yard, no doubt.
We put the battleship Mississippi and helped put her in commission, and after one of our convoy tours, or during one of our convoy tours, we were anchored up in the Hudson River, and I took sick with yellow jaundice, and they sent me to the hospital in Brooklyn, and Tertha was in a church group that visited the sick and injured in the hospitals, military, and I happened to meet her when she was one of those groups, and
She's with a church group.
She was with
She wasn't a nurse.
Oh, no, no. No, she was only, I don't think she was 18 yet. Just, you know, just a kid. But there were three or four of them that were in this particular group. And when I got so I was convalescent enough I could walk, I was invited up to her place to a birthday party. From there on, got better and better acquainted, and finally wound up with marrying her on my birthday in 1920.
Your birthday is January 1st.
January the 1st.
Mm-hmm. You were married January 1st, 1920.
1920, yeah.
Brooklyn.
Yeah, Brooklyn, New York.
Well, was Hertha born and reared in New York? Was she a Brooklyn girl?
Oh, yeah, she was born and raised in Brooklyn.
Right in Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah.
And then you brought her to Alaska.
And brought her to Alaska. Well, she was young enough.
She was...
In love enough, I guess, to go anywhere. But she loved Alaska.
I know she did.
Yeah.
She really did.
She at least. She beats any of them for just plain down-to-earth love the country.
Well, did you come up shortly after you were married, that a year or so? Or
yes.
That year, or when?
I went up to... we moved up to Akron. I had a job waiting for me up at Akron in the machinist gang up there, and she got pregnant up there, and she wanted the baby in Brooklyn, back home with the folks. So we stayed up in Brooklyn and Cleveland, or Akron and Cleveland. Oh, I don't know, I guess 5 months or so. And then came back to Brooklyn. The baby is born, and 2 months after, 3 months after she is born, I put her in a basket, clothes basket, and headed for Alaska.
Now, the baby was Evelyn.
Evelyn, yeah.
You have a son.
Yes.
Forbes Jr.
Forbes. Well, he's not a junior. He's got my brother's middle name.
Oh.
Forbes Dorman.
Forbes Dorman,
yeah.
Baker.
Yeah.
And Evelyn was, you have the two, Evelyn and Forbes Dorman.
Yeah. And then I have a younger daughter, Helen.
Oh, Helen, yes.
She's down in Louisiana.
But Evelyn was your first.
Yeah.
She was born in Brooklyn.
She was born in Brooklyn.
Just a few months old. You put her in a basket and headed north.
Yeah. No, just three months old.
So when you came north, the Alaska Railroad wasn't built yet, was
Oh,
it?
No.
So you must have gone to Skagway.
We came to Skagway.
And over the White Pass to
White Horse. The railroad tracks in Skagway still ran right up the main street, Broadway. And we landed in Fairbanks, came to Fairbanks on the last steamer that was... a through steamer from Dawson to Fairbanks. From then,
that went all the way.
Went Dawson. All the way from Dawson down through to Tanana.
Remember the name of the steamer?
The Tanana. And but we got on that in Dawson and came right on through and landed in Fairbanks.
Now that was in 1921 or 1922? 1921. Was it late in the season?
No, that was in the summertime. It, I don't know. That'd be awful hard to figure out because we stayed over in Chicago with an uncle for pretty near a month on account of steamboat strike in Seattle. And then we were held up again with schedules of some kind in Dawson. We stayed over in Dawson 4 or 5 days. But I would guess that we got here in the latter part of July. That'd be my guess.
So your daughter Evelyn was just a few,
Well, she was born 20. On your 21st of April.
21st of April.
I think that's her birthday. So that'd be April to May to June to July, 3. Well, she'd be about 4 months old, wouldn't she?
You must have had a job waiting for you to take your bride and brand new baby all the way back to Fairbanks, Alaska.
Yeah, I had a promise of a job as an engineer, as a shift engineer with the NC company. Yeah, there was.
By this time, with your Army and Navy experience, you must have had quite a lot of, a lot of practical work experience in radio, I guess.
Oh, not too much radio, but steam. I had the first class license in seagoing steam.
From your Navy days.
From the Navy.
How about machinists?
I was a qualified machinist. That is, if a machinist ever becomes qualified, I mean, you know, I've worked at it all my life.
Then what job did you have promised? Or what'd you do when you and Hertha and the baby got here to Fairbanks?
Oh, but within less than a month, I was working with the NC company as one of the shift engineers. Call them a shift engineer or shift fireman or whatever it was. You had to fire the boilers and take care of the engines and generators. One man to a shift.
That was the NC Powerhouse?
That's the NC.
Now, your mother was still here.
Oh, yes. She's married to Roy Ferguson.
And your brother, Dorman.
He died in 1918 down at Camp Lewis.
Now, Dorman, your brother Dorman is the one the American Legion Post here is named after.
Yeah, that's right.
The Dorman H. Baker
Post. Post. American Legion.
Mm-hmm. He also was in the Army or Signal Corps?
No, he's just infantry. He was...
Infantry.
Yeah, he was... He was in the group that went out from here. I think Ainer Tonsis was in that group, and Edby Davis.
They went here probably to Tanana.
They went to Tanana.
Fort Gibbon.
They gathered up quite a crew of them there. And, I don't know. Did you know Milo Solich?
I don't think so. No, I don't know.
He had a homestead down the lower Gold Stream. He was in charge of the group. And he was a rather hard man to understand. He was a Slavonian, or one of those Balkan states. But he had been a colonel in there, in this particular army, that whatever country is in. And he was a military man. And they put him in charge. And they gave him written instructions to proceed to Camp Lewis by the quickest available transport. They got them to Skagway. And mind you, he has about 60, 70 men. None of them knew the beans about military, except that this fellow was the boss. And there were two ships in there. And the Sophia was one of them. And the papers somewhere along the line, on the way out, had instructed him to take this group on the Sophia. And he got to Skagway. You know the story of the Sophia.
It sank.
And he got them to Skagway and finds out that this other ship, I don't know the name of it. Don't remember it. But this other ship is leaving 4, 5, 6 hours ahead of the Sophia. He marches them on this other ship. And the Sophia went down and lost every soul on it. There wasn't a person saved. And he said, "Here I am." He said, "Here's my orders. Quickest." "Yeah, but it says Sophia." I used to like to hear Ainer Tonsis tell of it. "Yeah, but it says the quickest route." He said, this ship leaves first, this ship we go on," and they did. He saved all those lives.
And your brother, you say, died in Fort Lewis, Washington.
Yeah, Camp Lewis, they called it then.
Camp Lewis. When you came back to Fairbanks then in 1921, and you got this job as a machinist,
mm-hmm.
tell me, let's talk about that, about your life here. Where did you and Hertha and the baby live? Did you have a,
up
you live with Mama?
Up a second.
Well, did you have a house of your own?
We stayed up there for a couple, maybe 4 or 5 days. But the house that we owned and had lived in was on 2nd and Dunkel. Link lives in it now.
Frank Link.
Frank Link. He lives in it now.
Uh-huh.
And it looks almost the same now as it did.
Is that right?
When we...
I was joking when I said you lived with Mama. I joke with my son who's 19 now. And
well,
I say, are you going to live with Mommy all your life,
George? We lived at the mill, but I don't think it was over 4 or 5 days or a week. It was tough on my mother. You know, mm-hmm. It's been a long time since she'd had a squalling brat around the house, and. Evelyn was afflicted with what they called a 9 months colic, and she said nothing you could do to keep her quiet, even in her sleep, while she was moaning and groaning, and awake, while she just kept the roof raised. The only person that kept her quiet for a couple minutes of the stretch was coming out of New York. There was no second class, you know, what they call tourist rate on the railroads. It was all first class. It's the only thing you could do. So we rode the 20th Century Limited from New York to Chicago. And of course, that's all Pullmans and sleepers and dining cars and all that, and black men for porters. And he looked at her while she was doing all this squalling in a basket, and he put on a big grin for her, and she looked at him and grinned back, and just as quiet could be. So he said, "You always," you know, both of you, said, "Go up and have your dinner." And he said, "I'll look out for her." And he did. And she didn't leave a peep out of her. Just as quiet as could. He let, any time he'd come by and stop and talk to her, she'd shut up. I don't know what that means.
That got over, she got over it, though, after she was a little older.
Oh, yeah, sure, she outgrew it. But she sure picked a bum time to act that way, because...
Well, some babies are like that.
Traveling, you know, just miserable for everybody.
Some babies just are like that when they're real small.
Yeah.
Colicky and fussy.
I don't know what it was. It's nothing we can do for her. Different doctors.
And then after you arrived here, you had two other children. Forbes Dorman Baker,
yeah,
your son, and Helen.
And Helen, yeah.
And they all of your children went to school here in Fairbanks.
Oh, yes.
They've lived here. You've lived here ever since.
They took all of their schooling here. None of them finished college, but they all took a whirl at it.
Yeah. But you left here when you were about 17, and then you came back later after you all these years in the Signal Corps,
mm-hmm.
chasing Pancho Villa and going to Hawaii, 4 years in the Navy back and forth to Europe. You hadn't been back to Fairbanks?
Never, no. No, it
time.
Was maybe just about 11 years that I was gone.
So then you came back, so you must have been about 28 years old, or 29?
Well, 21 plus 7, 28.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I think I married my 28th birthday. Pretty.
Good afternoon, Mr. Dean Van Gilder, host of
in 1920, 27. Either 27 or 28. How would you figure that?
Well, you were
born in January 1st, 93.
93, and you were married?
Married 20, January 1st, 1920.
So that would be 27.
That'd make 27. And I'd be 28 when I got back.
And you were gone all those years, and then you've lived in Fairbanks all the time since?
All the time since.
Your mother then, did she remain in Fairbanks? Or?
No, she went out. Oh, gosh, you got me there, Mike. Just pure guess, I'd say she went outside about 1935 and died down in Tucson, Arizona. And gee, I sure couldn't bet on it, but I think she was out about 5 years before she died.
She was still married to Roy Ferguson.
Oh, yes.
At this time.
But
they moved outside to Tucson?
Well, not Roy, but my half-sister and she were out there. Mother's health was terrible in the last few years, and something I never did get absolutely straight what she died from, but I imagine it was tumor, cancer of some sort, the way she described it in her letters.
Mm-hmm.
But she never admitted to it, if that's what it was.
Well, you've been, once you were established in Fairbanks, you got pretty active in things. So after your, I know that you've been active in the Masonic Order, and I don't want to go into that because I think I have that already on this other tape that I didn't louse up.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I loused up the first part of that edit, but I'm getting some interesting little sidelights here that I didn't get before. You're tying into that second wire on the farmer's fence. You know, that's
well, any person
practical.
could talk for hours,
yeah,
and wait a week and start in again and remember or.
But you worked for the NC company, and then did you stay working for them all the time? Or
yeah, I worked for them. They had deactivated their machine shop, and so I worked for them that winter as an engineer fireman, I guess is about the best designation you can call the job. And they opened up the machine shop, so I took that over. I ran the machine shop. Bill Hunter was the main plug in the whole thing. He was chief engineer of the whole works.
Was that located right where the old powerhouse used to be? Machine shop? Was that
well,
right
the old powerhouse is right across from the on Turner Street, right across from
where the post office is. Back door of the post office.
Well, across the corner, kitty corner.
Oh, yeah, right.
The powerhouse is right across from the back corner of the First National Bank. Then the machine shop is up on the next corner on Turner. It's a parking lot now. In fact, Turner at that time was a dead-end street. The fire hall was right on across the corner there. And the what is now the concrete post office then was the frame structure of the old courthouse, jail, and what have you.
So you worked in the machine shop for the NC. And how long did you stay with them? Or you didn't stay with them, because I know you worked for the News Miner later as a operator.
Well, I have to give or take a year or so in there to tie things together accurately. But Charlie Peterson bought out the NC company and
machine shop.
And I worked for him, and Frank Mapleton was machinist over at the roundhouse, And he got to a point where he didn't get along very well with the foreman and propositioned me. He said, what do you say we swap jobs? They paid the same amount of money. And this is all right with me. You know, I thought pretty much of Frank. He, good guy. Can help him out and still be in a good position myself. And there certainly was no future in the machine shop with Charlie Peterson because the camp wasn't that good. That's before the FE company days. So we made the swap, and I went to work for the railroad. And I worked for the railroad a little over 2 years, and Charmer Nordale was editor of the News Miner, and they were having an awful lot of trouble with the linotype operator. He was an epileptic, and if you get just one drink, why, just a short while afterwards, a matter of an hour or so, why, he was just no good. And the machine was going to pieces. They only had one linotype. And he propositioned me to learn to operate a linotype.
Did he own the newspaper?
No, W.F. Thompson was still a...
But Dahmer was the...
But he was editor.
Editor.
The wind-up, W.F. died, and that he was running it for Mrs. Thompson. And, so I would sounded good to me, and it meant a little more money if I could cut the mustard. So and the funniest thing of all of it was that I was going through the Masonic chairs at that time, and we wore evening clothes. The officers wore evening dress
at meetings.
At their meetings.
Yeah.
So I would go in there on my way down to Masonic Lodge, get in a couple hours, setting type, and here I am sitting there dressed in a swallowtail suit, sitting at the linotype, right in front of, I was on Cushman Street then, it's up where Claw's place is now.
Pinsker's. Yeah.
And the window's right open on the street, and here I am sitting in a swallowtail suit,
the
bow tie, and the people looking at there. Here's Baker sitting there. Like, thought he was putting on a circus of some kind of his own.
It's a wonder they didn't put you in a straight jacket and send you out to morning.
Well, they were pretty lenient in those days.
Well, today is December 13th, I think.
13th.
Yeah, Thursday the
13th.
And Saturday is December 15th, Pioneer Christmas Dinner, and you're going to go to that.
Yeah.
And I understand you're leaving Sunday the 16th to go to Maui.
To Maui.
And you're going to go over there and chase the hula skirts or just...
Oh, no.
I'm just kidding. I let
them chase me, and I'm that way I'm never bothered.
So this guy.
Everything is quiet all the time.
But you'll be in Hawaii then for 3 or 4 months?
Oh, I'll leave there the latter part of March because I want to see some of friends down in the Bay Area. Southall Fund, for instance, you remember him?
Southall?
Fund, P-F-U-N-D, P-H-F-U-N-D,
yeah,
Fund.
Fund.
Used to be attorney here for the
FE
company.
Yeah. Then you'll be back up in the spring.
Then I'll be back very early part of April.
Yeah.
See, I got to find some place to live when I come back.
Is your house one of those?
The highway, yeah.
It's all,
they took it. They have taken it. I'm a renter as of January the 1st.
Right? Have you moved all your belongings out of the house?
No, I haven't moved anything. I moved some of stuff out of the house over into Evelyn's storeroom.
But when you come back, then you'll be looking for an apartment? Or
looking for an apartment or something to get into.
Then your son Forbes and your daughter Helen, now they don't live in Alaska.
Oh, no. Forbes lives in, his home is in Issaquah. think of it as Seattle, and the daughter, Helen, down in Oberlin, Louisiana.
Has she lived there? She hasn't lived in Alaska.
She's been down there 7-8 years, I guess.
I see.
They've been down there once before and moved back up here and tried farming. He's a farmer at heart, but just couldn't make a go of it. So he went back down there doing good.
Well, how many grandchildren do you have?
Oh, 11.
11?
Well, whoever hears this, I hope, doesn't know more accurately than I do, but that's my...
That's the count you go by today.
That's the way I got it counted now.
Well, when you're in Hawaii in the winter, do you see any Alaskans over there?
Oh, heavens.
You've been over there for several...
This is the fourth time.
What Fairbanksons do you see over there, or do you bump into?
Oh, golly, the last group that I got into that sort of obliterated my memory of all others was Jane Wood
Dorothy Jane Wood? Dr. Wood's Marion Wood?
Marion Wood's daughter, Jane Wood. What's her married name now? I can't.
Pryor.
All other names escape me now. It's she and her mother and Sigwald and that gang.
That's a gang.
Oh, boy.
I was at the Piner home day before yesterday, and Marion Wood has just moved to the Fairbanks Piner home.
Oh, she has?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that Piner home?
The Piner home?
Yeah. Well, look.
I think it's pretty nice.